KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Good morning. Well, as we reported, the United States Olympic Committee said on Friday it has selected Salt Lake City to be their choice for the Winter Olympic Games and perhaps 2030. In the studio with details, I have the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So was this a slam dunk?
I don't think anything is a slam dunk, but we certainly were happy to see that we got the nod and ready to go when the USOC is.
So the other choice was Denver. Was Reno still in it or no?
They were up until about a month ago or about 3 weeks ago. They kind of realized that they weren't ready to move ahead and ready for a visit from folks looking at that. So they bowed out about a month ago. And so, yes, came down to Denver and Salt Lake.
So was this an open meeting? Did you guys get to hear some of the discussion by USOC members?
Or? No, nobody went out. It was board meetings of the U.S. Olympic Committee in San Francisco. And they just told us to be prepared for a phone call towards the end of the day last Friday. And there was a little bit of anxiety given all of the issues that the USOC was facing over the last couple of weeks. And so I was pleasantly surprised that they went ahead and made the decision and gave the nod to Utah.
So it's almost certain that we're talking about 2030, but it seems like the USOC kind of left the date open.
You know, they're pointing out for a date in the future, whatever that might be, but the focus and their statements are, yes, for a process for 2030.
All right. So why do you think this is a good thing to bring the Olympics back to Utah?
Well, you know, for me, this is a bit of an affirmation by the USOC to say, wow, Utah has not only, you know, put on a great games back in 02, but they have kept the facilities well-maintained. They're dynamic, active. They're used by all ages, all abilities, especially getting youth and not just our national teams involved in training. And they've continued to hold events that really showcase a level of support that I don't think any other region in the country has gone to this level. So for me, the rationale for the USOC was to say we couldn't have a better partner in Utah and we're fully behind them. And when that opportunity arises, we're going to be in a partnership with Utah going forward.
And not everyone shares your enthusiasm. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily against the game so much as it was the impact that Utah saw after the games and just a lot of growth. I mean, so what do you say to those people?
Sure, and that really will be a good topic of discussion over the next many years. I think if we look at what traditionally an Olympic Games has done is it's, you know, provided a boost for economic development in the more traditional means, and that's not what Utah is looking for in this. And this has been a discussion already with Mayor Andy Bierman and the Summit County Council. And, you know, I think what this will allow is for us to focus on how we effectively bring people into town to host events or bring in for large happenings like Sundance. I think we'll hone our ability to do major events and to move people in and out of town in a much better way. And I think that will spur a lot of efforts like improving our mass transit and public transportation systems, a look at sustainable approaches to how we actually put on a games, and to allow these games to be a focus for what is important to the local cities and regions that are host communities.
For the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, well, actually, you didn't really exist until after the 2002 games, but you were really the organization was the beneficiary of the profits of the game. Are you expecting to see something like that again?
Yes, and that is needed. The surplus that we had from the 02 games provided a investment portfolio or endowment that allowed us to keep the facilities open and operating and maintained with investment earnings on that surplus. You know, that is slowly eroding, if you will. Some had predicted we would be out of money 20 years after the games, and we're not. So a future games would re-endow the surplus in the endowment fund, and that is built into that budget that we've been talking about to add an additional surplus to allow us to keep these facilities open in the future in perpetuity.
I don't recall the original surplus. What was that?
It was $76 million, mm-hmm. and the goal would be to add an additional $50 to $80 million in a future games.
Yeah, and then of that 76, I mean, how much have you had to dip into the endowment?
It's down to $60 million actually, with the way the markets have been the last couple of months. It's down to the mid-50s. So it's a little bit of anxiety when we see such fluctuations in the market. And that for us is a good reason. Our all hope is to not have to have taxpayer funds help out Olympic facilities. And so far that's what we've been able to achieve and want to do going forward.
So we're talking about, $135 billion to put on the games?
1.35.
Yes. I put the decimal point in the wrong. $1.35 yep. billion. Okay. So where does that money come from?
That actually all comes from funds outside of Utah or generated through ticket sales and sponsorship monies locally. And that, I think, is one of the key messages that our small group of exploratory committee has been trying to get the word out. The only taxpayer funds would actually come from federal funds to pay for security. And that was how it happened back in 2002. And that is the intent here. So most of the monies come from the International Olympic Committee through broadcast rights. And those amount to almost $600 million. Then there is additional ticket revenue. That's an additional $300 million. And when we go through the added monies, they all tally up to about $1.35 million. And it's a break-even budget without the needs to draw upon local taxpayer funds.
Okay, you said million. Is it
$1.35 billion.
Billion,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What has to be done, if anything, if Salt Lake City were to get the IOC nod for 2030?
Not a lot. That is the beauty of what we'd like to showcase, that we have existing facilities that are being maintained and they're being used in a dynamic way. We're four times busier in use of our facilities than we were right after the O2 games. And that, you know, when the USOC visited, they were just drawn to the fact that we have so much youth and so much use that's beyond just sport. We use these facilities as public recreation centers, and we use them for the general public to come do some very unique activities at these facilities that help us generate a little bit of money.
So what about the IOC? When do they actually make a decision?
That's the big unknown. The honest reality is there's no defined process yet for 2030. And that's a little bit of where we need to remain patient and now develop a partnership with the USOC in a much greater way than we've had. And that, to me, is the exciting thing, because what they've essentially said is we're behind Utah. We're going to be partners with Utah to figure out how we might do back-to-back games with Los Angeles in 2028. That is an effort that opens up some really interesting new dynamics that haven't existed before, where we might be back-to-back with a summer Olympic city. And there's advantages to the broadcasters, to sponsors, and those are things that we'll get into. But the actual timing of a decision is still yet to be defined.
Well, it seems like it could actually be a really good thing. I mean, right, in terms of the advertising that helped pay for the bills, right? I mean, by packaging the two games with the big sponsors.
We think so. And that will, you know, certainly NBC has been hosting or, you know, putting on games in Asia now that will be for three in a row from 2018 through 2022. So having the games in sort of the North American time zone, I think, is something desired by a group like NBC, and certainly from a lot of sponsors in the United States. I think as our due time is coming.
You know, we still hear about this, the bid scandal. I mean, is that still a a tick against Salt Lake City?
You know, that is something that still people remember, but that is in stark contrast. We have that dynamic, and then we have what a lot of people viewed was one of the best games ever that were put on, and especially, you know, how our games 5 months after 9/11 really brought the world together. And so people remember that as well. And I think people more now are seeing and hearing from their countries about their athletes having terrific experiences coming to the annual Deer Valley, you know, World Cup, to going to a speed skating event at the Oval or a sliding event at the park. We have done things that other countries haven't really done, and that is continue to host these international athletes in regular competitions. And as you well know, a busy winter that we have coming up.
Yeah. So locally, what happens here? I mean, do we name an Olympic committee?
That is still going to be a topic of discussion of when we actually put a bid committee together. Still unknown. And I think a little bit we're going to follow the lead of what the U.S. Olympic Committee works with us on.
All right. So what happens next from here? I mean, just kind of a wait and see.
It's a little bit of, again, being patient, seeing how the process for 2030 will get put out there. Obviously, a lot of things we're seeing is a lot of countries not wanting to host, and we're an anomaly right now. We actually have a very supportive general public to this process. We have local and state leaders who, whether from the government or business community, are fully behind this. And so we're staying the course. We'll continue to host major events and point out how we can have these Olympic venues being maintained and used in a unique way that really serves as a model for other countries who are looking to host an Olympics.
In terms of venues, are Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon still out of it?
You know, if you look at the World Championships coming up for freestyle and snowboard events, we've got an event over at Solitude. So that is great to see. I think nothing is ruled out of how we would look at locations for future competitions. So, you know, we have a games concept that we outlined in a report that's available at our website. Right now, too soon to say exactly what events will go where, but we have a lot of willing partners. We checked in with each of the resort operators and the ice rink and multi-use facilities, and everybody is so behind this, wrote letters of support to the U.S. Olympic Committee, and we couldn't be happier with having a set of venue operators that are ready to go.
Okay, but we don't need to build anything.
No, we don't, and that's the beauty of what we'd like to point out, because our proposed budget is like 50 times less than, say, how Sochi, Russia put on a games, or even other proposals. We can do this in a very responsible, practical, and efficient way, and put the focus of athletes first. That is what I believe the world would like to see. That we put on a games, but also work with our communities to make sure this is done in a very efficient, responsible way that doesn't cost the local, state, and region funds that they can't afford to do.
Let's see. And meanwhile, you are busy building athlete housing there at the UOP. Where do things stand there?
We're super excited with our builder, Jacobson. They are just doing awesome in a very tough construction market right now. We are putting a roof on to get it all enclosed. We're up through the fourth floor of this, amounts to be a combination apartment building, as well as a short-term hotel for visiting athletes. And for me, I'm really excited for our staff at the Olympic Park. This is going to also be workforce housing for our staff at the park. And all told, we'll have 146 beds on a four-story, approximately 55,000 square foot building.
And that includes like laundry facilities and kitchenettes and
yep.
things like that?
So even for the short-term housing, we'll have sort of a first floor common eating area so that athletes, when they come in from Steamboat or from Lake Placid or around the world, they'll not have to go out every night on a budget that they don't have to eat out, and be able to make a pasta meal in the ground floor, and and really celebrate a building that is there for athletes who most of them are struggling and need a place to hang a hat at a reasonable rate. So that's what we're building, and couldn't be more happy about it.
It opens this summer?
August of next year. And right now, we've been so focused in getting it designed and under construction. We're scrambling, trying to figure out how we'll operate it. We'll be hiring a housing manager to operate this building. We'll get a job description out in January and make sure that we figure out a process to rotate athletes in and out, as well as our staff at the UOP, to have a great place to live.
Okay, and then the other large facility that you manage, of course, the Kern Speed Skating Oval, the Olympic Oval there, and U.S. Speed Skating has made the move to Utah to be part of that?
So they made the move back in 2007 to Utah, and we've been had them crammed in our offices down at the Oval since that point. What we recently, last week, had a ribbon cutting of a new $13 million multi-use building. In one part of it was a permanent home for U.S. speed skating, for having, if you will, a mini center of excellence, much like the ski team has, but on a little bit smaller scale. Another part is expanded public fitness for the local park and rec district, and then a meeting and conference center. So it was an effort of pulling together five funding partners and getting that working with the community on what their interests were and having a community meeting and gathering spot. And so, you know, that I think was also very notable for the visitors from the USOC to say, not only are your venues open, but you are adding to them in very unique, positive ways. And really, we don't hear those stories around the world right now. And that's why I think in part was another reason they chose us.
$13 million, where'd that come from?
$5 million from Salt Lake County, $3 million from the state of Utah, $2 million from the local park and rec district, $1.5 million out of our funds, and $1 million from the USOC and U.S. Speed Skating. So that was truly a collaborative way, and I think that's kind of the thing we'll see going forward with these Olympic venues. Our next big effort is over in Soldier Hollow to ramp up the improvements over there. We've spent nearly $2 million just this last year focusing on improved snowmaking systems and improvements to a lot of the elements that were sort of getting old and need for repair. So those are the efforts that we feel are important going forward, and we've got a lot of community partners helping us make that happen.
Okay. And then your second winter of kind of overseeing the Park City Ski and Snowboard team. How's that working?
It's moving along. We're, you know, bringing together five clubs under one roof is no easy task. So John Kanarowski and all the coaches are doing an awesome job trying to work through all those growing pains of coming together and doing awesome. And again, I think the other exciting thing we're doing is ramping up an effort on a new capital campaign to build improve ski and riding terrain at the Olympic Park through this project of mountain expansion.
So that's what you're talking about, is trying to build, I mean, basically a small ski resort that would be used for training.
Athlete training focused. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we have an incredible partnership with Park City and Deer Valley that, you know, everybody learns to ski at those facilities. But as they get into the next level of disciplines, we're finding with our partners a need to have focused athlete training areas. And, you know, our place at the Utah Olympic Park is we celebrate athlete training, and that's what we're going to try to do to develop early season access to skiing and riding facilities. And we've got between the Park City Ski and Snowboard Club, Romark Ski Academy, and the University of Utah, an effort underway right now to raise $11 million to expand the facilities at Utah Olympic Park. And we're early on in that process, but we're probably about 30% of the way towards that goal already before we make it a real public effort.
So are we talking just one chairlift?
Two lifts and a little bit of a realignment of our internal road at the park to allow the hill right behind the museum to about double in its size. And then over to the West Peak to the right as you look up the bobsled track, we've got a north-facing slope that will be ideal for alpine and freestyle training terrain.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just that we've got a lot of great events this week. We've got ski jumping and Nordic combined event, the FIS Cup, Wednesday and Thursday this week. We start up today with public bobsled rides at the Olympic Park, and would love for folks to come out and see the venue and get a thrill of a lifetime. Tubing over at Soldier Hollow is going to be starting up here around Christmas, and cross-country skiing is open and available there. And down at the Olympic Oval, public skating. So we are open and kind of highlighting the ability of everybody, all ages, all abilities, to come be entertained at our Olympic facilities.
Got a lot of balls in the air there.
We do.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's Colin Hilton, the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. With the busiest time of the year approaching the Park City Recycling Center, Director Carolyn Ward joining us with a few tips on how we can help soften the blow for her staff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so it's...
it's already getting busy. I was out around lunchtime helping with cardboard yesterday. We're getting hit pretty hard right now. A lot of the online ordering, and that, most of that comes in cardboard. We've been seeing a lot of that already.
Can we talk a little bit just about that? I mean, it's just exponential, the growth, right, in online shopping. So all of that cardboard, what, coming to local recycling centers?
Yeah, if you're familiar with recycling center, it's like a tan container. It's called a compactor. You know, it's a machine that kind of smashes it all up. We're kind of to the point that our operations manager started about a year and a half ago. And, you know, Inza told him back then, oh, you'll maybe haul this maybe twice a week. We're hauling it four or five times a week right now. We definitely have seen the change in how people shop and how people enjoy the holidays and how people find their Christmas gifts, for sure. A lot of big boxes, too. A lot of replacing your TV, a lot of Amazon boxes, of course, a lot of new furniture. We could totally tell that World Market had a sale on furniture because we saw all the World Market boxes coming in the week after Thanksgiving. So we're kind of seeing what's happening out in the marketplace at the end of it all.
And is there a market for cardboard? I mean, it just gets recycled into new cardboard, or?
Yeah, most cardboard is turned back into cardboard. It does have a life cycle that it can only be recycled so many times. You know, a cardboard box is, you know, the newer end of the cycle, whereas a toilet paper roll is the end of the cardboard cycle. The cardboard market has changed the most out of any commodity since I've started my job. You know, it started and was really awesome, and right now I wouldn't describe it quite awesome, but there still is a market, and we're still able to work the markets for cardboard, so.
Okay.
Not great, but still we're doing the right thing. We're keeping it out of the landfill, hauling it down to Salt Lake. You know, four or five times a week right now. It's been pretty big.
Okay. Well, you're kind of hoping people will contribute in just a little bit to help you offset those costs.
Yeah, we did a little cost comparison last week. The week after Christmas, you know, this 7 days after Christmas cost us $5,000 to process everything that comes to us. And if every car that came in gave us a dollar, we'd be able to cover our costs. So really something to think about when you come visit. Everything does have a cost. To get it recycled, it's mostly hauling it to the recycler. Even if the commodity does have value, we still have to pay to get it to them and value their services and processing for us and turning it into something new.
Okay. So what's the number one thing people can do to help you and your staff there?
Pre-sort. You know, if it's at your home and you're opening Christmas presents, it can be super exciting. The kids are all super excited. If you can pull the bows off the paper before you come to the center, it's going to be so much easier. I feel like the day after Christmas, the unlucky person has to bring all the recycling to the center, and then they start dumping that whole bag of wrapping paper in the paper bin, and I say, are there any bows in here? And they say, no. And I'm like, no, there are bows. You need to take a step back, take all those bows off, and you don't want to be standing outside in the cold pulling bows off your paper. It's just a lot easier. Take the bows off ahead of time, slow down on Christmas, or do all the fun of opening presents, and then when you feel like you need to move a little bit after sitting around and having coffee and yummy breakfast on Christmas morning, take a second, pre-sort in the comfort of your own house. It makes it so much easier. And then that goes for cardboard also. We've seen a lot of, you know, styrofoam in with cardboard, and someone throws the whole thing in the machine into the compactor, and we can't have that. You know, in order to ensure our stuff gets recycled, we need to keep the loads clean. You know, if it's a load of cardboard, it's legitimately a load of cardboard. It doesn't have styrofoam in it or plastic bags. Same thing with a mixed paper bin. If it's a mixed paper bin, it needs to be all paper. No ribbons, no bows, no plastic. So that helps us a lot and helps you eventually. If you come to the recycle center, if you can have it all sorted ahead of time, it'll make your trip, you know, quarter of the time. It's a big difference.
Okay. Anything else people can do?
Just drop a buck when you come in. Help us out on that end. Pay to get it recycled and do as much as you can ahead of time, even down to your plastics. I when I recycle my plastics, I just dump each one in each bag. I don't even sit in the plastics tent looking at numbers sorting. It can be so much easier. So
okay. I think Christmas Day is one of the few days you take off, as well as New Year's.
Right. We'll be closed on Christmas Day and New Year's Day. And we're going to close at 4 o'clock leading up into that on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. We tend to get kind of quiet at nights right now because it's cold and dark and hard to recycle in the dark. So hopefully that won't inconvenience too many people too much. And we do close. We block off the parking lot to do your recycling. It's pretty difficult. So we just encourage you to wait till the day we're open.
Okay. And normal hours then are what?
8 to 5:30, mm-hmm. Monday through Saturday, and then 10 to 4 on Sundays.
Okay. With the exception of Christmas Eve and New Year's, you'll
Correct.
Be closing at 4.
Yeah, and I think those are Mondays anyway, so yeah. I'm just closing a little early those days.
Okay, and you also wanted to talk a little bit about some of the Green Business Awards that were handed out?
Sure, this is our second time doing the Green Business Awards. We haven't quite handed them out yet. We're in the process of selecting the winners. We're going to celebrate that on January 8th at Alpine Distilling Silver Creek location. It's kind of where they make all their good spirits and everything. But January 8th from 6 to 8 p.m., and the two awards we're handing are Green Business of the Year and Zest for Zero. We have 70 businesses in our Green Business program, and we got it down to 5. Mm-hmm. So between the Christian Center, Deer Valley, Park City Mountain, River Horse, and Twisted Fern, we will choose 2 winners. We have a panel of judges right now reviewing all their applications and seeing who's deserving of those awards. And we also do have a new thing this year. It's called the People's Choice Award. If you go to our website, anybody can vote on any of the 70 businesses. So if you're a business in the Green Business Program, we definitely encourage you to get your supporters out voting for you. Anybody's eligible for that, and anybody can vote for that. It's a great way to get your word out about the good work in sustainability you're doing in our community.
Okay. So for 2019, anything that I guess you'll be talking about, maybe a new recycling center?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. The partnership between us and Summit County has been awesome. We're working together a lot. Not a lot of things I can talk about, but I can tell you we are working on that. And then I'm having good conversations with the board on our master plan, and we're even getting ready for a request for qualifications to see who wants to build our site and what it would look like. So it's getting pretty exciting. We're taking big steps, getting ready to move when the time needs to be that we need to be out. So
yeah. And do you have the money to make the move, or are you going to get some help from the city and county?
We do have some money in savings that we'll be able to at least get started with, but we will need to get some help from the community and the city and the county. So, we have a good base to start with, at least. So
yeah, so we talk about a capital campaign.
Yeah,
at some
probably.
Point.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No. Happy holidays, and keep in mind we are closed on Christmas and New Year's.
Okay, Carol.
Thank you.
See you next year. Thank you. KPCW News Time now 8:46. Well, the Egyptian Theater presenting Christmas with the Celts Wednesday and Thursday nights. In the studio, I have the producer of the show, Rick Blair. He also sings, plays guitar, and piano. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
So my understanding is that this is the show that we have seen on PBS?
That's correct. Yes, it's called Christmas with the Celts. It's aired as a pledge show across the country. And what we've done, we've taken a combination of old Christmas carols, ancient Christmas carols from Ireland, Scotland, that most Americans have not heard. And we combine them with American Christmas carols, but with Irish instrumentation. We combine like drum loops and synth. So it's ancient meeting modern. There's Irish dancing. Our fiddle player's from Scotland. Our piper is an all-Ireland piper from Connemara, Ireland. And just a great bunch of musicians and Irish dancers. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, so how many people you can have on stage? I mean, when you talk about dancers and musicians, yeah?
Well, I think in this show, I believe we're going to have somewhere around 15. Sometimes we have a string quartet, and we sometimes hire local Irish dancers in the children's choir before a surprise couple numbers at the end of the show. This is the last two shows of a tour. We've been on the road since November, and this is our 8th year of touring across the country.
Oh, wow. So then you get to head back home and enjoy the holidays.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned a couple people from Ireland. I mean, is your heritage Irish? Or?
It is, yeah. My, like most Americans, my father's family goes way back to Scotland, early 1600s. But then my mother's family comes from the late 1800s from Ireland. Her family's from Derry, Ireland. My father's family is from Blairgowrie. Blair is actually a Scottish Gaelic word for battlefield, and my wife will certainly attest to that. That's a joke, folks. but yeah, it's so I really had no chance. I studied classical and jazz at the conservatory in Cincinnati, a Midwest guy, and a friend of mine took me to an Irish pub to hear Irish music for the first time. And immediately I was, that's what I want to do the rest of my life. It's such warm, organic, earthy music. It's music of the people. It brings people of all cultures, of all ages together. And it's you can't listen to it and not be happy.
Yeah. So you get some bagpipes on stage too, or a bagpipe?
Oh, yeah. Uilleann pipes. The Uilleann pipes are the Irish pipes. We also have, the baron. Play the Irish baron, the Irish flute. These guys are all like top professionals. Of course, Celtic fiddle and Irish whistle. So. Yeah, it's a combination of that, guitar, bass, drums, synth loops. It's a fun combination of music.
Well, I just pulled it up, and this just changed. So it says that the show sold out. You had two shows, Wednesday and Thursday.
That's been happening. It's really horrible.
Well, good for you. I mean, I don't know that I've seen that happen. You needed another night or two here. Maybe next time.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to... be great. Play this track so people can at least hear it for themselves, since they won't be able to buy a ticket. I bet there's some Pharaoh seat tickets left for those who are members of the Pharaoh Club. But so I've got track one. Tell me what this is going to be.
Okay, you get track one. We put together a combination of Christmas carols. So it's like a medley. God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, Joy to the World, and some other things, some Irish tunes combined. It's okay. It's off the CD, Christmas with the Celts. You can find it on Amazon and all the plugs like that.
Okay. Well, hoping this works. It's been a long time since I've played the CD player, so hopefully this does it. Hey, thanks for coming by, Rick.
Thanks for having us.